Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Show on BBS Radio. It's November 28th. I'm coming to you from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. And I work under the logo of Zero Point Institute for a Mystical and Spiritual Science. And this radio show explores various aspects of mystical, spiritual, occult teachings, modern science, consciousness studies, models of higher dimensional reality. Those are my interest areas as a mystic scientist. I'm interested in the psychology as a science of the soul, because if we look at modern psychology, we find that the idea of human beings as having a soul was basically dismissed in modern times about a century ago with the development of Darwinian evolutionary theory and the viewpoint that human beings were simply higher primates which evolved through random and accidental genetic changes from lower life forms. And in this whole modern paradigm, a human being, in a way, we are nothing but our bodies. There is no ghost in the machine. There is no God spark. There is no soul to a human being. So psychology in its ancient meaning actually meant the science of the soul. But then over time, the psyche became interpreted as the mind, and in modern times, psychology is defined as the science of mind and behavior. And there is no, in modern psychology, there is no psychology of the heart and soul. So I came to mystical studies because of my interest as a psychologist in the nature of human consciousness, and working as a psychologist and a psychotherapist, I understood that people had to bring things into consciousness that are in their unconscious, or to make people self-consciously aware of things that go on within them. So I realized how important the development of consciousness was in psychotherapy, both on the individual basis, and then also we can apply that in terms of looking at the life of humanity. Recently, before I forget, I would invite listeners to, at some point, to view my website at www.zeropoint.ca. And I have chapters from most of my writings up there and clips. You can hear some of my talks, even my time on Coast to Coast. And there's videos up there showing my presentation in California on the secret doctrine of Blavatsky, and there's a lot of material up on my website. So I would encourage people to have a look at that. And I've also been putting up some of my more recent political and CAP-related activities up on my website as well. My co-host, James Moffat, is unable to make it today. So I'm going to just carry the first half hour of the show by myself. And on the half hour, I'm going to have three guests come on. I'll talk a little bit about my recent activities this last week. I kind of stuck my neck out a little bit in submitting a letter to a Senate committee in Ottawa and then distributing it publicly, and a little bit of a shocking letter, an outstanding statement or something. And it always causes me a little bit of anxiety and trepidation afterwards. Oh, God, here, what am I saying and putting this out there? So I'll go into what my activities have been this last week, and we'll have other Canadian activists on to talk a little bit what's happening in Canada around what's called Bill C-6 and enforced inoculations and the alternative media emerging in Canada. So that'll be for the bulk of the show today. But I've become quite political, I also like to keep this theme of the psychology of consciousness and study of occultism and mysticism. I like to keep coming back to that because I think that's what I have most unique to contribute to the whole whole situation that we're in terms of what understanding we need. I've recently submitted my book, The Heart Doctrine, and hope soon to have trade paperback editions of that book available, and hopefully before the turn of the year. So I'm excited about that project. Okay, so I had a talk with someone the other day. The idea of success came up. And this lady is writing a book, and she mentioned the word success and people being successful. And I wondered, well, what? What is it to be successful? And I guess everybody, in a way, has their own notion of success, because we all strive to accomplish the kind of things we want to do or be or have and so on. So everybody has different definitions of success. And then I was trying to think, what is success from kind of the perspective of mystical studies that I come from? And it reminds me of a story told by Gurdjieff, or told about Gurdjieff. It was told by fellow Fritz Peters, who wrote a book called Boyhood with Gurdjieff. And he was a houseboy to Gurdjieff when he had an institute in France in the early 1920s called the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man. And this boy was with Gurdjieff one day, and Gurdjieff said to the boy to look out, what did he see in the yard? And Fritz Peters said, well, there was an oak tree. And Gurdjieff asked him, do you see any nuts? How many nuts from that oak tree? And there were nuts all over the ground. And the boy said, well, there are thousands of nuts. And Gurdjieff asked the boy then, how many of those nuts will become oak trees? And kind of Fritz Peters thought about it and said, well, I don't know, you know, maybe just a few, maybe just one, maybe none of the nuts will become oak trees. And then Gurdjieff says to the boy that we must study nature to understand ourselves. We have to understand nature, because in a way the same principles work in nature as in ourselves. And in a way he says, So with an acorn has the potential to become an oak tree, similarly, a human being has the potential to, according to Gurdjieff, acquire his soul. Okay, so, and that is what Gurdjieff also describes as attaining your true I. Okay, for Gurdjieff, that involves attaining the state of self-consciousness, which he says is the next level of human consciousness in our evolution. He says most people think they already know what self-consciousness is, but they haven't really attained it. And people, the self they think they know is really the mind and the conditioned self within the mind in the head. But that the true self is connected to the heart, and the state of self consciousness involves the awakening of the human heart. So that, for Gurdjieff, is the next level of human evolution, is to attain to that level of consciousness. And then there's further state beyond that. So Gurdjieff, in a way, so that's how sometimes I think of people. That's how I think of myself. I'm a nut who wants to become an oak tree. You see, that's, I like that, eh? Because we're all nuts. We're all nuts. It's like when you wake up to all the ridiculous things in the world, the insanity of the world, like, holy smokes, this is nuts. You know, we got all these nuts. And how many of them will become oak trees? And Gurdjieff says to Fritz Peters, and he says, well, and what happens to the nuts that don't become oak trees? He says they become fertilizer and they go back into the ground. And he says the same with human beings. So Gurdjieff has a different view. See, some religions, in the way they say, everybody has a spiritual spark or a divine spark, and you have a soul, and you're guaranteed happiness in the everlasting afterwards. But Gurdjieff is different. He says, no, we have the possibility of acquiring a soul, but that unless we make individual efforts and strive towards our own awakening and evolution, we cannot attain our souls. We can lose our souls. See, and today in society, many people are losing their souls in a way. They're bought out, they sell out, they lose their essential self. They lose touch with their heart center. They no longer feel compassion or caring for other human beings. They're incapable of that. They're incapable of the experience of love. Love of fellow human beings, or love of nature, love of life, love of God. There's all different forms of love. But people, what happens is certain people become hardened about the heart, and they become all knotted up about the heart. And then that heart feeling in them is lost. And that can happen, and that, as that happens, the mind in the head can become more and more inflated, and the person, in a sense, becomes an egomaniac. Only concerned with their own self and their own welfare, and they have no heart. Now, these people in the world who kind of consider themselves elite, in a way, they're not elites at all. They're in a way, they're degenerate types. It said in a human being, your heart chakra is your fourth and central chakra, and you got three above it and three below it. Most people in life are ruled by the lowest three chakras, and those are associated with the motives of money, sex, and power. And you look at all the activities of the elites in the world. In a way, what is their concern? Money, sex, and power. These people, their greed is unspeakable greed. It's unspeakable greed. Reminds me of Uncle Scrooge in Walt Disney. Someone who has masses and masses and masses of money and hoards it all in some place and keeps it for themselves. And the common people kind of struggle and barely get by and manage, strive to survive. And meanwhile, you have this big fat cat with all these this wealth. And these big fat cats with all this wealth, they, you know, there were millions of people starving in the world. Like, they wouldn't care, you know, because they could acquire their property or have domination over them. Their greed is unspeakable. It's like their emptiness inside them. You see, they want to acquire material possessions to acquire a sense of self, to fill the emptiness within their own hearts. So some people, it's acquiring possessions and money. Other people, it's power. Like you see Henry Kissinger, he says, like, aphrodisiac, power is my aphrodisiac. Well, like, imagine that. I mean, someone's power is an aphrodisiac? My goodness, you know, is that healthy? Is that, I mean, is it because of your impotence that that's true, and that you kind of shifting your energy over into this second chakra instead of the first one? You know, powers your aphrodisiac? I don't know, that's weirded out to me. Because I'm kind of a mystic more, you know, I want to be free in myself in my life. And I try to help other people learn to wake up and be free in their life. And I can't imagine having control over anyone. I don't have control over anybody. I wouldn't want control over anybody. I want to just be free. I want other people to be free and be free together. And yeah. So, but some people would want to have, like, power over it. And again, it's because there's something lacking in them, something lacking in their heart that they kind of compensate for by, like, wanting power. I remember as a young boy reading a book called The Psychopathic God, Adolf Hitler. And it was analysis of Hitler's background from all these different psychoanalytic perspectives. So it kind of went Freudian psychology, Adlerian psychology, and it was a very insightful book gave many insights, and one of the things about it was apparently during the war there was always a claim that Hitler had an undescended testicle, and that from his earliest age, because of his feeling of inferiority about his undescended testicle, that he strived, according to Adlerian psychology, to compensate for this feeling of inferiority by attaining to the status of superiority. You see, because people who in themselves feel most inferior, that's what happens. They try to strive to compensate for that, to attain some superiority. You see, like the elites, they think they're a superior type. They're superior to the sheep people. The people who have no idea of what's going on and who've been completely deceived by all the media. Okay, and the elites kind of know they're above that, and they have no compassion for ordinary people. So in ways, money, sex, and power. So those are, and the sex, I miss the sex. And you see, like, the perversion, like, so many of these elites, it seems that they're kind of all tied into the prostitution and the child porn, porn industries and the prostitution, pedophilia rings and all these terrible, terrible things. It's like, wow, don't any of these guys have a normal sex life? Kind of like, wow, you know, it's so weirded out. It's like you wake up and it just gets worse and worse and worse all the time. My goodness. So anyway, we have we now got a kind of world ruled by these monopoly men. Oh, and that reminds me, see, that's interesting. See, there, the game of monopoly. And it's so interesting. Like, I think life's all there in the game of monopoly. We've been on the monopoly board for the last century since the Federal Reserve was formed, and we have these monopoly men taking over the United States and other countries of the world for foreign bankers and elite influence interests and so on. And this has been going on for decades and decades, and people have just been deceived by it because of the mass hypnosis of the media. So this has been going on for a long time, and monopolies, like, that's what we're on. We're a game of monopoly. And there's a group of people who want to monopolize, and they want to own everything. They want to own you and your grandchildren and your wife if they want her, and your pets, and they want to own everything. Your resources, they want to tax you for everything. They want to confine you into cities. And then you even got a Masonic goofball who puts up a bunch of stones in the state of Georgia saying that, you know, this is dedicated to these kind of futuristic ideals of bringing the Earth population down to 500 million. And that they think is sustainable because of the little intelligence that they have. They have this kind of scarcity consciousness. Oh, the world could only sustain 500 million people. And there's already 6 billion. It's way past all their little concepts, you know. If they weren't doing all these devious things around the world could sustain probably 3-4 times what we have. You know, everything is so fraudulent, you know. Fraudulent moon landings, the global warming fraud, the 9/11 fraud, you know, the Iraq with their nuclear weapons fraud, all these frauds all the time. You know, the war is all based on fraud and public deception. You know, it's just incredible. We see the kind of moral degeneracy of humankind on the planet. It's amazing. And people don't see it because the masses of people, they're like hobbits who stay home. That's where the masses of people are. Sometimes I like the comparison to the Lord of the Rings tale, because in a way I think we're in a Lord of the Rings situation on planet Earth. And book 2 of Lord of the Rings is Two Towers. And the kind of forces of evil and darkness are ruling the earth and subjugating everybody and polluting and destroying the land and developing all these weapons and all these hideous beings. And they're kind of taking over all the nations of the world. And then in The Lord of the Rings, what you have is like these group of people who from around the world begin to amass, who begin to kind of realize that they need to come together. and you have the different peoples rallying and coming together to oppose this great darkness and this evil that's taken over the world. And we're in exactly that situation today. What's really happening in our world is every bit as grand as Lord of the Rings. We are truly in a Lord of the Rings story. You know, we have these kind of like these forces of darkness taking over the world. They've undermined the democracy. They're spreading diseases through their inoculations. They're spraying people with poisons from the sky. The police are corrupted. The health services are corrupted. The media is corrupted. Your politicians are corrupted. It's like it's become a whole systemic corruption. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. And then meanwhile around the planet, you've got people all around the planet. Because these problems, they're not American problems, they're not Canadian problems. Well, they are American problems, and they're Canadian, and Israeli, and English. All the peoples of the world are facing the same tyrants in the world today. The same peoples, the monopoly men, who want to own the world and rule over people, and implant you with a little chip, and be able to determine your life course, and how long you'll survive or not. My goodness, it's quite a tale. And most people are like little hobbits. They sit home and they watch their TV, and they watch news on TV and think that they're publicly informed, and they watch their soap operas, and they watch their hockey games. Oh boy, all these people, all the little hobbits, the hobbit people, the sheep people who believe their government lies and believe the media lies for the past decades. Because the media has lied to us about every significant national and international event over the past 50 years. The media is completely criminally corrupted corporate lying. That's what it is. People have to wake up. The corporate media makes no effort to inform you because that's not their job. Their job is to brainwash you. So you have really no idea of what's being done, and they create so much confusion. And then they've done a very good job. The media does a good job. You know, the corporate media. Just people don't know what the job is. People think the media is supposed to keep us informed because an informed public is the only basis on which you could have a truly democratic country. Because if people aren't informed, like Canadians, they have no idea what's going on in their government. You know, and people pride themselves on being conservatives or liberals, and they trust their government. They have no idea how corrupted the whole system is. And it's become systemic. See, for many, many years, I worked as a psychologist in prisons. And during the early first 5 years of that, I worked in a maximum unit on the maximum correctional center, whoops, I hear a dog outside, in Ontario with the worst young offenders. And I found through my life experience that whenever I heard, I would work with some offenders who had done really horrendous crimes, even multiple murders and really terrible crimes and things I can't imagine doing myself. And yet, whenever I would hear people's stories, and I could always understand how everything in their life and the circumstances and the way they've been traumatized and what was done to them, I could always understand why that all led to the person doing what they did. And in a way, I always had compassion for that because I could see all these people, how much we're all such a product of our conditioning and environment. And these people grew up in these depraved, difficult situations for various reasons and abuse and so on. And I could always understand their crimes. I never felt that, oh, these people are kind of significantly different from me or anybody else, because they're not. And I think that today, in a way, we have to see a little bit like how the elites in the world, they are so much a product of what their conditioning is, that they themselves undergo sometimes quite horrific kind of conditioning and upbringing to cultivate them and bring them into these elite circles and to cultivate the kind of attitudes roles that they have to take on in their lives. And these people, see, so many people who go along with the whole New World Order psychiatric disorder, as I call it. I call it the Old World Order, Old World Psychiatric Disorder. That's what I call it. They call it the New World Order, you know, world government by criminal elite. Okay, that's their New World Order. Okay, so I call it the Old World Psychiatric Disorder. It's like these people have been doing these crimes for so many decades and centuries. All their criminal wars and deception of people and poisoning people. And we as humanity on this planet, we've never dealt with this. These lies have just gone on and on and on. And it's shocking when you then, you know, you have a truth movement like through the internet and shows like this and many others. Begins to wake people up and you begin to realize all the lies and crimes of our government and such through the decades. It's terrible. I heard an Australian journalist, John Pilfer, I think is his name today, and he was saying through the past decades, America has overthrown 50 governments in the world. 50. So really, like, that's what's been done. And Americans, I mean, they don't think, realize, if they don't realize, oh, we're a terrorist state, you know, we terrorize the countries of the world. We've overthrown 50 governments, and we've armed everybody to the teeth, and we arm all these different groups, and we carry out false flag activities and start wars to make money for the masters of war. You see, this just goes on. It's gone on for decades. 50 revolutions and governments overthrown by the CIA and the Rockefeller clan and all these people, whoever they are, you know, it's terrible. They've been doing it around the world. So you leave people all around the world starving and desperate and their wealth stolen from them. This is, and Americans, all you gotta do is put it on TV and spin it in the right way and make a Hollywood movie and Americans think you're all being, you know, you're saving the world and from making, spreading democracy. You know, you just mass murdered 2 million people in the Middle East, all based on lies. Oh my God, doesn't anyone realize, like, have people gone insane? Do I live in an insane world now? Mass murder is accepted? You know, these are war crimes. These are terrible, terrible, atrocious crimes have been perpetrated against humanity. And justice is going to be done. So we have a Lord of the Rings tale going on, and it's a sometimes scary time to be alive. For me, it is. I put my neck out sometimes in this show and other things I do. And yet I kind of feel, well, I'm supposed to be teach spiritual things. And can I be a spiritual teacher and then kind of back away from trying to face this monster in modern times? It's like there's one theory. One thing is to be a spiritual teaching and have spiritual ideas, but is another to try to be brave and face evil in the world. And that's what we all have to do. We all have to somehow be brave of heart and try to come together to face these beasts in modern times and take back the countries of the world. You know, take back the countries of the world. What we need to do is charge the real terrorists under the anti-terrorist legislation and seize all their assets. And it would probably pay off all the debts of all the country of the world. And every, in my view, see, this is what I'm trying to push as a world concept, is you seize the assets of the elites all around the world, and by 2012, all the countries of the world have their national debts reduced to zero. And all those people of the countries own all the assets within their country borders. That's the concept. And these people who want to kind of Uncle Scrooge the world and, you know, they care nothing for the humankind, or the evolution of humankind on this planet, we can put them in camps together, FEMA camps, and they can enjoy each other's fine company. And humankind can kind of move on and have a new decade and era of enlightened science and technologies. These people have held humankind back so long in terms of the evolution of life on this planet, and we're at the moment descending almost into a new barbarism. So anyway, okay, so I'm just on the half hour, so I'm going to kind of shift a little bit and kind of move over to our guests for today. And I have three guests on, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to just, hearing the beep there.
Hello.
Do I have some guests in the background?
How you doing, Christopher? PK here.
Hi, BK. Okay, thanks.
Hi,
and Dee, are you there?
I am.
Okay, and Doug, are you there? Okay, so what I'm going to do, I've got three guests online, and what I want to do is open the floor to each in turn, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about this letter I'd mentioned earlier in the show. And we'll just go from there, and I'm hoping our guests can stay with me through most of the, till the end of the show. Okay, so I'm going to start off with someone who's becoming an almost regular feature on the show. Hi, Dee, how are you?
Hi there.
thanks for being available, making yourself available.
No problem, Christopher. Thanks to you, too.
Okay, it's just so important, and you've been kind of spearheading the opposition against this Bill C-6 in Canada.
I see it as more of like a Neptune's trident with multiple prongs on it, but yeah, there's a few of us.
Yeah.
A few of us.
Like the prong of Bill C-6 and the prong of enforced inoculations and the... Is that all there?
Well, I was speaking more of the prong of Canadians for Health Freedom and the prong of falseflagflu.com and the prong of 911 Truthers and the prong of pressfortruth.ca and all of those other prongs that are stuck in the butt of these New World Order types.
Yeah, there are enough prongs around. I hope they start getting... tricked a little bit soon and deflate
some of
their...
Well, I'm sure they're feeling it because I tell you, there's a lot of stuff coming out right now that, you know, some of us have been going around pointing at it for years and being looked at like we had three heads. And now it's another story when you go out and talk to the average Joe Blow on the street. A lot of them know a lot more. And their natural distrust and distaste for government is starting to... be a sort of a prominent force in all this, and people are not being sucked in the way they were before.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you see that happening.
Well, it's happening all right, Christopher. It's just, you know, I'd like it to be at breakneck speed, you know, not just kind of lumbering around like an old elephant.
Yeah. It's like the accumulation of all these terrible threats against us. Like, it's like, in a way, I think, as Canadian citizens, we're being terrorized by these people. That's what I personally feel.
The classical definition of terrorism includes exactly what they're doing to us. They're making us feel disempowered.
Yeah.
Okay, which is the binding part of even torture. They are attacking us. In every aspect of our lives, they're attacking us in our homes, they're attacking us outside on the street, they're attacking us in the workplace, they're attacking us in the medical field, they're attacking us in the educational field. There is no place under which we are not under attack.
Yeah.
There is no place. There's no safety anymore, anywhere. And I don't care what, they call us sheeple, they call us animals, they call us their livestock. They're not exactly not open about that. They're not covert about it at all. They see us as a herd, and they treat us with a herd mentality. But what they don't seem to understand is that all living organisms have breaking points, and we're about reaching ours. So it's not about the label anymore. It's about the amount of negativity that is being heaped on people's heads, and there's only so much they will take.
Yeah. And you're having people coalesce who have different pieces of the puzzle, Like, there's the people who want health freedoms, and there's people who don't want criminal wars, and there's people who want 9/11 truth, and there's people who don't want to be sprayed by chemtrails. And
yes, and that's a really interesting point that you raise, Christopher, because what's happening now is we're finding that where it used to be that we had very diverse areas of activity, like your three guests on today would have three different concerns. I know BK comes out of the 911 truth, but BK's involvement, and correct me if I'm wrong, BK, but I think your involvement has really spread over a lot of territory. I started out as a drunk driving activist, and I've moved over to health freedom because there were so many health issues involved. And now I can't keep my fingers out of any pie because the whole thing is it's all one pie.
Yeah.
And the higher up you get...
We also have to react to what's happening. So I think that what happened 8 years ago is still important and all the ramifications since. But if they're launching fresh attacks on us, we have to deal with those.
Absolutely. And you notice that CBC even did a rather weak and inconclusive documentary last night on... 911, and I watched most of it. I was not impressed. They did present some of both sides, but they really didn't draw any conclusions. There's no bravery in journalism like that.
No, they're pathological liars. Well, all they're trying to do is cover their ass and try to pretend that they can look back and say, well, we tried to do a show on it. That's all it is. It's complete fraud. I mean,
We exposed them with the Evan Fristaglio issue because we found out, and we're not the only ones who found this out. This story has been going around the Internet that Evan Fristaglio, who became the poster child for H1N1 flu, did not die of H1N1 at all.
Yeah.
And that the medical community, the people who had seen the charts, the people who were privy to the testing, and members of the family themselves, we're saying that the kid did not die of H1N1. And when we confronted the Canadian media with this, saying nothing more than we want the truth, we did not say Evan did not die of the flu. We said we've heard he didn't die of the flu, and we deserve confirmation. Because if you're going to use this boy's death against millions of unsuspecting Canadians and get them to line up to take a toxic vaccine because of the death of one child, it ought to be based on truth.
They hide the effects when people have severe adverse reactions to the vaccines. I mean, a woman in Quebec died of it, didn't it? And I heard there was a case.
Yes, and a woman in Lindsay, 40-year-old Jacqueline Francis.
Yeah.
Who was the picture of health and leaves a husband and two young boys, was in transport to a Toronto hospital from Lindsay and died in the ambulance.
Yeah.
And according to inside sources on that, of course the medical community has squat to say on it, but the inside sources are saying that her entire head went blue, which is, anoxia. She had no oxygen. Why did her head go blue? Well, that would be because her lungs were full of blood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got people dropping like flies from this shot, whether it's a general muscle soreness that prevents them from working for a week or whatever. And what I have to say about that, before I forget to say it, is that people who have had the shot, people who have had any kind of adverse reaction from the shot, even if it appears mild, you must continue to monitor your health.
Yeah.
Because these are neurological insults to your body. And these neurological insults can not only accumulate over the course of time should you wind up in trouble from anything else, but on top of that, you just never know what it's going to do to you years down the road. I mean, if you wind up with a case of MS 10 years from now, you won't be able to turn around and blame the shot. You won't be able to do that because it's too far removed from the original incident. And,
With that, I had one further question to you, then I'd like to go to BK next and kind of introduce him a bit more formally.
Yeah, because he wants to jump in anyway.
I heard the case, Dee, of, was there a child out in Western Canada who started convulsing on the floor when they had their inoculations, and it kind of so traumatized all the kids that all the kids were let go from school and that?
Yes,
Did you hear that story?
I heard that one. And there's been a number of anaphylaxia cases where blood pressure dropped immediately. They're telling people they have to stay in the centers for 15 minutes after their shot. Now, if they're asking people to stay in the center for 15 minutes, they know that adverse effects are coming. They know they are.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll come back. We'll come back to this. And one other question before I move on to BK. Can you do you have an address where people can send reports of any adverse reactions? I think this is really important that we be, because the government's not responsible. The government kind of doesn't collate these and kind of promote them and let the public be aware. I mean, the government always wants to cover everything up. I mean, that's their pathological role.
And yes, we do have such a page, Christopher. It's at CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org. And if you look on the right-hand side of the page, you'll find a button to click that says Canadians Report Here. H1N1 side of adverse event or adverse reactions, Canadians Report Here. And you just click on that, and it'll take you right to the page where all of that information is, including a list of the symptoms and the rates of occurrence, which the pharmaceutical company expects to happen. Those are all listed there right from the package insert, so you can get an idea of what you're facing. On top of that, there are all kinds of diverse types of adverse events that have been reported. And when they started reporting the odd adverse event through David Butler Jones, basically he underestimated vastly according to what was reported on our page. And these are all Canadian events. Now, I would recommend that anybody who knows anybody who has had that shot, please pass that page on in case somebody has a reaction, because the numbers are such that in out of 10 people that you know who might have had the shot, at least two or three of them are going to have a nasty reaction.
Yeah. It's like Russian roulette, eh? That's what it's like. The government's kind of playing Russian roulette so that the pharmaceutical companies can reap in billions of dollars.
Yes, absolutely. Terrible. And their indemnification of the pharmaceutical industry against damages really underlines that point. Another thing that I would caution people is not to think that because the government has taken over purportedly all liability to do with these shots, do not think for a hot second that you can't sue them. Don't think for a hot second that because there are waivers in place that you can't get by them. You can. Yeah. Waivers are terrifically bad protections against liability. And if you've got liability that's stemming from this shot, yes, you can call a lawyer.
Yeah. And there are also other criminal laws, like it is against the law to attempt to commit genocide or to intentionally spread noxious substances. I mean, there's all kinds of criminal laws. If we could ever take back control of the, if the police ever wanted to be police again instead of...
Yeah, but Christopher, that's the problem there is that the courts uniformly regard such things as theoretical.
Yeah.
And once you've got a theoretical, and if you aren't a victim, you can't sue.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got certain legal protections in place, but there's certain loopholes and chinks in their armor that we can use, and we're going to use all of them. And we suggest everybody else find a chink in the armor and use it.
Okay, so Dee, we'll come back again. I'll get you to give that website out again, CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org.
Sure.
And I'm going to move on. Thanks, Dee, and she's Dee's staying with us. And I'll move next to BK, Black Krishna. Energetic and brave Toronto activist, beautiful young black man there from Toronto. Hi, BK. Thank you for coming back again.
Thank you so much. No, it's great to hear Dee's passion on the issue. Doug's, of course, yours, of course. And I think that she's right. The longer we wait with respect to helping people detox from the effects of the H1N1 shot, the more adverse reactions we'll see as our bodies' autoimmune systems respond to the toxins in the shots. With respect to that, here at, you know, at our weekly Street Action, which we've been doing for almost 6 months at TorontoTruthSeekers.com, we have been handing out information, thousands and thousands of flyers and DVDs, warning people about the risks of vaccines. We've had a significant impact. They're closing two of the eight clinics in Toronto. This is a recent media report, so
wow,
the H1N1 shot clinics. So we're actually shutting things down around here. We're feeling pretty good about that. But I also launched a campaign on Wednesday. I had a press conference at Conspiracy Culture Bookstore here in Toronto with Queen and Roncesvalles, conspiracyculture.com. Great little place. Been written up in the media. They do things very, very classy there. Beautiful little location. I had a mayoral press conference where I'm using my given name, Vijay Sarma, V-I-J-A-Y-S-A-R-M-A. Although I still like BK, I find I can actually speak more freely that way. But at my mayoral press conference, I launched a program called Detox. And just today, I brought 4 to a page and 6 to a page, 2,000 and 3,000 flyers, respectively, to our Street Action that basically say, detox, do you know somebody who's taken a flu shot? If so, tell them to detox right now. And it says, Google for Russell Blaylock's What to Do if 4 is Vaccinated. See his interview with Dr. Joseph Mercola. Visit GenerationRescue.org. Know that kids can have the toxins taken out of their body quickly and reverse cases of autism. And finally, see vran.org for exemptions and infowars.com for why this happens. That's the small version. The longer version has a bit more information. But the point is, Christopher and guests, is that what we're doing here at TorontoTruthSeekers.com is we don't want to be just seen as, you know, people who are doing something good. Isn't it great that you guys are doing this? More people should be doing this, blah, blah, blah. We actually want to say, look, here's a flyer. And if David Butler Jones is right in saying 1 in 5 or possibly 1 in 4 Canadians, say 8 million Canadians, has been vaccinated with the H1N1 vaccine, then you probably know someone. So if you know someone who's had an H1N1 shot, tell them how to detox right now by sharing this information. So we're trying to give people a compelling reason to talk to other people, to reach them quickly before the toxins and vaccines give them any permanent damage.
Wow, well, that's excellent, because it also at the same time warns people who haven't had them, like, why you don't want to take them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it also gives us, Chris, because we noticed that during the summer we were giving out, we have these signs saying free legal vaccine exemption forms, and it's true. We have them. We downloaded them from vran.org. People would come up to our table and say, oh, those are just for children. I don't have children. I don't need one. And many of them weren't taking one for friends of theirs who do have children or family that do have children. So what we're doing is we're trying to change the conversation with respect to that, to not only what can you do for yourself with this, oh, I would never take a shot, but what can you do for someone who has taken a shot, as opposed to just shrug your shoulders and say, you know, as some sort of lower level of eugenics, oh, well, let the stupid people get shot. They deserve it. I think that's something that the New World Order has sold us to think, and I think it's very dangerous if we start thinking that way. So instead of letting stupid people just get shot, why don't we try and talk to them in very simple, clear terms, see if they're smart enough to understand them, and then perhaps they won't, and perhaps we'll have less stupid people and sickly people in our culture.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so sad, really, because, like, there's so many, like, I was completely stupid until 3 years ago. Like, I had no idea of the kind of criminality. I had no idea of 9/11 until 3 years ago. And then I get this rude awakening. I'd trusted the government. I'd trusted the media. Like, I'm sympathetic to people, you know. These are our countrymen, you know. And these are other people who, you know, they've been intentionally and systematically deceived by the media and by our government. You know, these people are victims. You know, we're being victimized by our government, and I'm so sick of it. You know, so I don't think we should have that attitude at all, that these people are like the sheep people. You know, that's a terrible attitude. Yeah.
I look at this like there's a war on humanity going on here in Canada, a war on Canadians by this New World Order, you know, international globalist cabal, and I think that if there's any group in this culture, since we've all suffered from generations of brainwashing and poisoning and so on, but if there's any group that should be obligated to fight, it's all Canadian males aged 25 to 45 should be obligated to look at this information seriously and defend the women and children of this country, who are more than welcome, of course, to join in. I'd never stop activists like Ms. V. Nicholson, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Connie Fogel, Carol Brie, hundreds of others I know, brilliant female activists. But I think the pressure should really be on the men of this society of a certain mental and physical capability to act like men have always acted when the tribe's been under attack for generations, for centuries. And so if we can push this idea a little bit, I think a lot of good things will come of that, and some positive changes could result where we sort of get more in touch with our morality. As a man, with some capabilities, with some strength, with some intelligence, do I have a responsibility to defend other members of my culture? And so that's one area that we can leverage against the New World Order.
Yeah,
let me just jump in for a hot second here. And say that not only do I 100% agree with you, there are not enough men in this field who are willing to stand up and get out there. But one of the things that I've found very successful is telling people about when dealing with the H1N1 situation, telling males about the squalene in the shot and the fact that it reduces spermatogenicity, which is your ability to produce sperm. And when you're talking about that particular age group, 25 to 45, BK, you're talking about the guys who are having children or at least expecting to. And when they realize that their family jewels are being messed with, all of a sudden, there's interest there. You know, and it's just one little key that gets them interested. Oh my God, you mean they're messing with my family jewels? You're damn right they are.
Go ahead.
The Alex Jones Show recently had a report where pharmaceutical companies were putting plastics into medications, and they couldn't figure out why. But again, it's just more bits of plastic, xenoestrogen, trying to feminize the males. Billionaire Kevin Trudeau, a naturalist and author, Kevin Trudeau's theory is that they're just trying to feminize the men to make us more compliant, less capable of fighting back. And so if we can reawaken male instincts in a positive way that aren't just wasted on UFC or watching guys beat each other up on TV and that sort of thing, if we can actually find a way to reawaken those male instincts in a protective, natural manner, then we can maybe save some of that humanity. If not, then their frustrations are just going to be taken out on video games and violent culture, and they're not going to address the root causes of why they feel increasingly disempowered by our culture.
You're absolutely right, BK. Manhood is not a body part.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take control for a little moment here, and BK, you're able to stay on with us, are you?
Yes, sir.
Good, great. Okay, and I'd like to go to our third guest, and our third guest is new to the show, and it's Doug Shapira. And Doug is involved in the Owen Sound Free Press. This is an absolutely excellent website, and just looking at the top part of it, you have a block there with about 50 essential links to really informative and important videos and movies and so on. And Doug, thanks for joining us today, and thank you for the excellent work you're doing in creating a truth media through your website.
Well, thanks for having me on, Chris. And I didn't know about you till the other day. You sent me a letter about Phil C6 that you had actually sent to, I guess, the Senate, and I posted it on my website. So I thought I'd get to know a little bit more about you, and I'm glad that you've given me the opportunity to come on.
Yeah, I thank you very much for posting that, and maybe at a later point we can discuss that a little bit. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the Owen Sound Free Press and how long you've been involved, and I'd like to just give you the floor for a while, Doug, to share.
Well, I kind of had a mass awakening roughly about the same time you did, about 3 years ago, going into about 4 years ago. I myself, for the most part, trusted the establishment. I did have some serious questions in my mind that I really couldn't answer. I knew things were wrong somewhere along the line. I spent 8 years in the military, had gotten out. At that time, I was out for getting into just over 10 years. And I was actually thinking about going back, you know. And I actually saw the movie by Barry Zwicker, 9/11, The Great Conspiracy, the new special that you never saw. It was actually put on by the local chapter of the Council of Canadians, the Grey Bruce chapter of the Council of Canadians. And I saw that film and I said, well, wait a second here. What's going on here? We've got this massive war, terror going on. I'm dealing with a recruiting center that's telling me that they're going to take me back at, I think I was 38 or 39 years old. They're going to take me back in the military. And when I got in the military, it was very distinctly laid out that they would only accept anyone between the ages of 17 and 25. And if there was anyone any older than that getting in, it would have to be through very special arrangements. So at that point, I essentially changed my phone number so that the recruiting office couldn't get a hold of me anymore because it was basically a signature or two away of signing back up. And I basically started looking at things, you know, really deep and trying to assimilate myself with different sides of the political paradigm, the left-right side of things. And in so doing, I thought it was important to start putting pen to paper and reporting on the things that that I was coming across. You know, I tried to speak to the mainstream media. I'm in a smaller city. Owen Sound is about 30,000 soaking wet, which expands out to an area of about 150,000 people in the counties of Grey Bruce. And I tried to approach a lot of the local newspapers with some of this stuff, and for the most part, they were just totally disinterested. So I started to, you know, connect the dots together. So for the last 3 years or so, I've been, you know, working on my street-level newspaper, which is also available on my website, www.owensoundfreepress.com. And it's really, you know what, Christopher, it's a learning, growing experience as I go, because just when you think you're coming to a clear understanding of what's going on, something else comes up and you go, wow, I just never saw that. And a lot of times, a lot of it's just right in front of you and you don't see it, you know. So it's a growing learning experience as time goes on, you know. And I'm feeding off guys like BK. I'm watching a lot of the stuff that he's doing in Toronto and finding out the next step is how to get the information to the people and how to get them on board and how to get them to switch off the mainstream media and maybe not listen to the government so closely and start thinking for themselves, you know.
I didn't know you also have a street-level paper. That's excellent. What's your circulation of that about?
Well, it does vary, Christopher, because it is, for the most part, funded through private donations, most of them anonymous. Some of them correspond to some business ads in the paper, but most of them are sort of anonymous. But, you know, I might get out 2,000 to 3,000 a month in the Grey Bruce area, and then I try to get some of them into other areas of Ontario. So it does help because there's a lot of people, Chris, that aren't on the internet, you know, older people, country folk who just don't even have access to the internet. And then there's a whole branch of people that just don't trust the internet and they don't want, they know they're right because they're being monitored, you know. So they really appreciate being able to pick up printed publication and find out, you know, what's the true story behind the H1N1? Where did this thing come from? Find out a little bit about 9/11 truth. Why are our troops in Afghanistan? This type of thing. And they really appreciate it. And a lot of them, what they'll do is they'll pass the paper on to a neighbor, make copies of the clippings inside, and I find them posted all over the place. It's really encouraging in that respect, Christopher.
How long have you had your website up for?
Well, the website's fairly recent. It's just about been a year now that the website's been up. I've had postings of my newspaper on various websites before that, but the Owen Sound Free Press website was set up about a year ago. And I generally post a lot of stuff that I write, but I get stories from various people across Canada and across the world. I'll even post some of the stuff that is happening with BK and some of the tremendous things he's doing in the Toronto core, you know, handing out flyers, and I'm aware of his stand downtown. And I'm doing similar things in this area with various people, trying to get out to the public health unit and basically getting on to megaphone and announcing to people that there is some serious risks behind these vaccines, and before they walk through that door, they might want to take some, you know, handouts or a copy of the Old Sound Free Press, read it over, you know. You know, there's a lot of accomplishment there, but sometimes it's really frustrating because, you know, I get people coming up to me. There was a fellow that came up to me the other day, Chris, and he said to me, he says, what do you think about this H1N1 vaccine? He says, are you going to take it? I said, there's no way in heck I'm taking any vaccines. I've had so many vaccines in my life, and I know they damaged me. I'm never going to have one again. And I've done a lot of research into vaccines. And one of the key issues that I always, or more recently, tell people about is that there is information in something called the Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, which is a recognized textbook for medical students universally. And in older editions of that book, it definitively points out how very specific vaccinations are the cause of very specific diseases. And, you know, I mean, that's the white coats themselves telling you right then and there that these vaccines are dangerous. So anyway, this same particular fellow said, well, you know, based on that, it sounds like you've done your homework, Mr. Shapira. I'm not going to get a vaccine. Then I ran into him about a week later, and he told me that he did get the vaccine because he felt that he was in a high-risk occupation and that he needed it. So now I'm taking some of the information that I just heard from BK, and I've heard from some other people that there's, you know, detox programs and these types of things that you can actually use to basically rescue yourself if you've got these kind of toxins in you now.
Well, you know, Doug, it's amazing. With respect to that, Dr. Russell Blaylock has also mentioned that regardless of the vaccines themselves as sort of an entity that we think is, you know, good or bad, what's in them, things like mercury, aluminum, and so on, are independently known to have toxic effects on the body. So if they happen to be in vaccines, when they get injected into you, they're going to have the same effects that were known independent of the vaccine issue. Those toxins themselves are bad for us.
Yeah, it's interesting because our public health unit here in Grey, Rousse, Owen Sound published a document that definitively pointed out in the front page that it says, quote, do vaccines contain dangerous chemicals? And then it says no in, you know, an underscored sort of fashion. And then it says vaccines contain formaldehyde, aluminum, and mercury. So in sort of a semantic sort of way, they're trying to tell you that these things aren't toxins. So what they're trying to do is acclimate the public into believing that these things, in fact, are not toxins, or if they are, because they're in such minute quantities in these vaccines, there's nothing to worry about. But when you inject these types of toxins directly into the bloodstream, you're bypassing a lot of the gatekeeping network that has been created to protect the human body through the nose and through the mouth and the digestive system. So you're getting into a whole different ball game here, you know? And, you know, it's an uphill effort. We try to get down to the flu clinics and give out information. But there's a lot of people that come up to me and say, you know, I'd really like to support what you're doing and I'd like to work with you, but they are fearful. The fear-mongering that's going on, the intimidation against people is incredible. A lot of people just don't want to step out onto the sidewalk with a sign or hand out flyers because they're afraid that there's going to be some kind of, you know, action against their private property, their jobs, or even, God forbid, their children, you know.
Doug, can I just jump in here and underscore what you're saying here with something that many people are aware of? Desiree Jennings is a cheerleader for the Washington Redskins.
Yeah,
she got the H1N1 shot, and her story of how that shot disabled her and gave her dystonia, which the medical community says is incurable, and she had to literally speak in individual words so she could take a breath in order to speak. I mean, the girl was completely in a wheelchair, destined for death, when she got to a doctor by the name of Dr. Rashid Batar. Now, Dr. Batar has got her on the road to recovery. So anybody who thinks that having a shot, if you have an adverse reaction and it's serious, you're done for life, no, you aren't necessarily.
You
owe it to yourself to follow these protocols to cleanse yourself. Dr. Russell Blaylock, of course, is one of the prime concerns in terms of people being able to see what's going on. But just to underscore what Doug was saying, Dr. Batar, who has Desiree Jennings well on the road to recovery, to the point where she, on her website, is chronicling her own improvements, and they are amazing improvements. And I've seen improvements with orthomolecular therapy, even in Down syndrome kids returning to normal because of vitamins and nutritional essential elements. And I've seen all this. But here's the thing. Dr. Batar is now under attack for using methods that are unproven and ineffective. Well, if they're that damn unproven and ineffective, how come Desiree Jennings is improved?
Yeah, let's hear the patients complain if they're ineffective. That is ridiculous. For easier access to this information, Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey, two well-known celebrities, support the organization GenerationRescue.org, where their team of medical experts is helping to reverse the effects of vaccines causing autism in children. So autism, they're helping to slow that down with changes in diet, removing things like yeast and bread from your diet. So there's lots of ways to get people into this information, and I do find referencing them helps. It's almost like making unfamiliar or scary information more familiar with the addition of celebrities, something that, you know, we all kind of smile, or at least we're supposed to smile and appreciate when we see them. So if you want to help people get to Dr. Batar, one good way is Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey.
I wanted to point out about the autism issue and how it relates to some disinformation that's out there. If you look into this particular textbook that I was telling you about, the Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, which is the universal textbook for medical students across the world, they make a specific indication about something called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. And when you read into this, inside this Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, the symptoms of this syndrome are identical to autism. And when you look into a lot of the information that's going around, there's a lot of information sources that are pinpointing autism to mercury. And Don't get me wrong, I would never downplay mercury. It is a toxin and it is a neurotoxin, but it is not the culprit, from what I understand, behind autism. The culprit behind autism is the measles virus, which is in the measles vaccine. And it's very important that we uncover a lot of the misinformation out there, because there seems to be this movement going on that vaccines somehow could be made safe. But my understanding about vaccines is there's two key issues that people have to understand. First off, that there is little or no guarantee that they will ever prevent any kind of infection in the human body.
There's no guarantee at all.
They are dangerous.
I would go further.
There is no question about them. So whether you take mercury out of these certain vaccines or not, there's a multitude of other contaminants in there that will likely damage your body. So we have to watch out. There's a lot of misinformation, disinformation clinics going on all over the place on the internet. I mean, the government's bad enough, but there's stuff all over the internet posing as alternative information sites. And you really got to do your homework before you start promoting a lot of this stuff and putting your name against it, because these double agents are everywhere.
Yeah.
Doug, I had one thing on autism, and that autism is a blanket term for a collection of neurological disorders. So there's not one thing causing one thing. They just, if your kid's messed up and they feel like calling it autism, they'll call it autism.
It's called autism spectrum. Doug, can you stay on with us through the end of the show?
Absolutely. How long were you planning on going?
Well, we go till to six, but I was going to read my letter on air.
Pardon me?
I was going to read my letter on air and then go into that a little bit, and I'm pleased to have you stay on, and we can have some discussion afterwards. Is everyone
ready? Chris, I'll do another 15 minutes, then I'll get back to my guys in the street, just because it's been a long day of doing different things, and I got to stay out there with them a bit in the cold to keep my credibility. So
yeah.
But yeah, I'll do another 15 minutes. I appreciate that.
Okay. Have you known Doug prior to today? Did you know he was promoting you and putting your stuff up?
Only by reputation. And Doug, it is a great pleasure to meet you through this medium. And I have to tell you, I am also in Toronto, and if there's anything that I and BK can do for you up in Owen Sound, let us know. We can arrange things. We all need to work together.
Yeah.
Doug, I spoke with Doug. Doug and I have been in touch over email. Still have to talk to you on the phone once, Doug, and have a really full-out conversation. But I was planning on helping to lead a contingent of Toronto Truthers up to Owen Sound to just level Owen Sound, maybe take 20, 30 of us guys up there and just make sure everybody in Owen Sound knows what's going on behalf of Doug to support his efforts up there and just to show the people.
That's what I'd like to see,
Victoria.
And if you can, that I can arrange the accommodations and make sure you guys are housed and fed and make sure that there's some kind of venue for you people to speak at, and maybe we can show some films. So that's really something I'd like to see happen, BK, and if you're willing to do it, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make it happen on this end.
And we've all got the film for sure.
Yeah, one of the things that we're trying to pioneer here at Toronto Truth Seekers, and at TorontoTruthSeekers.com, members are welcome from all countries. There's flyers there. There's flyer templates. You can just change certain designs or certain words to make them, adapt them regionally and use them in your city, no matter what part of the world you're in. What we're trying to do is we're trying to pioneer techniques that people can use anywhere. And one of the ideas we've been mulling over, especially since last October when I was hanging out with Ottawa 9/11 Truth and one of their members from a small Quebec city of about 9,000 near Ottawa, was very upset that that his town wasn't even close to waking up. And so we talked about it with Ottawa 9/11 Truth, and we said, you know what, the 20 of us could go up there and we could easily hit 9,000 people. With flyers and then a bunch with DVDs and so on, until that whole town hears the information at once. And like propaganda, when propaganda reaches everyone at once, everyone feels like that's what they're supposed to talk about. If all this information reached everyone in an area at once, then they would all, did you get one of these? Yeah, did you get one of these? And they would all talk about it. So we could do that with small towns. And that's an idea that we can pioneer that can be used anywhere, where people from big cities do satellite road trips out to friendly truthers in small towns. We've got Jeff and Daniela, a great couple who come up from St. Catharines, a couple hours away from Toronto. They come up almost every Saturday to help us out here, and so we're certainly planning on going down to St. Catharines and helping them take care of their own block. So there's all these things that we can do, but that are not only for us in our commitment level, in our interest, in our schedule, but things that we can say to anybody, look, we all have this problem. A few of us here are working on these solutions. This is how they've gone so far, and they've gone fairly well. So by all means, you should try them. There's no excuse not to. So the idea of the question, what can we do, will be eliminated from the truth or language if we have anything to say about it.
Well,
it sounds fantastic to me, BK. I've watched a lot of your YouTube clips. I've seen some of the work that you've done downtown. I was wondering, just not to get sidetracked too much, but are you familiar with the situation that Dan Dix was in recently when he was filming down at the CNE I guess Al Gore was there recently, and some of the CNE security had attacked one of Dan Dix's assistants and perhaps even damaged some of his equipment. Are you familiar with that situation?
Yeah, Dan and I are good friends, and Dan is often my boss as I freelance journalize for PressForTruth.ca. I spoke with him last night about it and interviewed him today where he showed up to our Street Action. I interviewed him for my CKLN radio show, 88.1, or CKLN FM, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 6 to 7 a.m. Eastern. But I interviewed him for that. And, yeah, he's based on the support he's getting, based on the fact that he has 20,000 YouTube views in just 2 days for this particular video because it intercedes or it merges nicely with the ClimateGate scandal, with the CRU East Anglia University emails being leaked showing the scientists know they're deliberately suppressing real data about global warming. You know, because of the zeitgeist that this video is reaching along with the sort of leaked emails, it's going viral worldwide. And I believe that Dan is moving forward with filing charges or filing a complaint or taking some sort of formal action against this to protect the rights of journalists on public property all across
Canada.
We
need to be doing this. We need to be doing this. And we need to be supporting our independent journalists because these are the guys that are going to be getting the key information to the public.
Yes, and we need to ensure that our alternative press members have certification. They should have every right to cover events just like mainstream reporters. You have the same responsibility that to the public that any other journalist does, and you should have the same privileges. And unfortunately, it has been the case in the past that alternative journalists have been barred from certain things because they're not part of Global, or they're not part of CTV, or they're not part of Pacific Press, or they're not part of whatever. And this is no way to get the truth out, so we need certification for these people.
At the rate we're going, you won't be able to see footage like Alex Jones bullhorning the Bilderberg meeting outside a hotel in Canada, outside of Ottawa, in 2006. Because what happened to Dan is that even though he was on public property, they moved him twice. And the second time they moved him, they practically pushed him onto the street. You can see the video at PressForTruth.ca. The point is that they're now being told that they don't want any coverage of this event. So it's not so much that you can't get press credentials to get in the event, although they have, and PressForTruth.ca is registered with the Ontario government. It's more like you can't even talk about an event on public property while the event is going on public on private property nearby. So if I'm on a sidewalk near, say, the U.S. Embassy, security might say, because there's an event going on in there, you can't even cover it from a public area. We're going to shut off your free speech rights. And personally, at TorontoTruthSeekers.com, we started off without a table. We got a table. The city officer said, you guys need to get a permit if you have a table. So we got a permit. Then the provincial, Ontario provincial officer, a couple weeks ago, about 3-4 weeks ago, overruled the city guys and shut us down and said we're no longer allowed to have a table. So they said you need a permit to get a table. We got a permit. Then they said your permit's no longer good for your table in the Kafkaesque world of the changing laws that we live in here in Toronto.
Just goes to show you.
BK, thanks very much for being here today, and it's great that there are people out like you on the street level. I mean, we just have to get out to the streets and getting the message out to people. Do you want to give out what website or address you'd most get people to attend to?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, number one, I'd like to say that when you actually do get out there and you actually take the time to, carefully communicate your message to people with a little compassion, a little intelligence, then people respond well. And so you get away from the sort of impotent frustration of wondering why people don't do anything. If you try and talk to them, Canadians are nice, Canadians are compassionate, many will listen to you and will at least respect where you're coming from, even if they don't want to act on it right away. And then second of all, with respect to my work, you can Google Black Krishna, BlackKrishna, go to TorontoTruthSeekers.com, or for my Toronto mayoral campaign, go to WhatYouWantToBelieveIn.com, and don't forget to tell your friends and family and everyone else to detox if they got an H1N1 shot.
BK, when is your when is the mayor the election?
The election is in November 2010, and my plan is to go month by month against Smitherman, Giambroni, and Tory. So basically every month I'm going to say, this is what I did. I printed up 5,000 flyers. I warned a bunch of people not to get shot, and I told people how, if they did get shot, to detox. And I'm going to compare that month by month with what Smitherman, Giambroni, Tory, and the other candidates in the race have done. And I'm basically going to say, look, every month you can see what I've done for the city, and then you can see what they've done, and you can compare. And
wow.
If you, you know, instead of a politician just promising what they'll do after they get elected and then making excuses for what they can't do once they get elected, I think that you should show your commitment to doing stuff for the city before you get elected as one of the factors with respect to you being elected.
Well, that's excellent. You're out there a year ahead of time and really laying the groundwork for your run at that position. That's excellent. Put some, you inject some real debate into the race.
Thanks so much for your time, Christopher, Dee, Doug. Best of luck with your continued efforts. I'm sure we're going to stay in touch and win this.
I'll be here. Let me know when you want to come up and keep in touch. We got to sort of integrate our movements together. I think it's a great idea. Keep up the good work for sure.
Oh, Black Krishna. Doug, I was going to say, if you go up to Owen Sound to do that, I'd be really interested in contributing to that. I'd come up to Owen Sound for that. And,
well, all are welcome. All truthers are welcome, for sure.
Yeah, and BK
thank
also.
You, thank you so much, folks.
BK?
BK.
Okay. Okay, so I guess that's BK. Dee, I'll give you a moment. Anything you wanted to bring up in yeah.
Well, I know Doug's kind of itching to get at that C6 thing, so why don't we just hop right into that puppy?
Okay, yeah, and I would like to read my letter. I think it would only just take me a couple minutes.
Yeah, that would be a good idea, Chris.
You go right ahead because it's good background. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I can give a little bit of background. What I did this last week in Ottawa, there was a Senate subcommittee that's considering Bill C-6, which is this bill being introduced in Canada, which introduces all these kind of totalitarian powers for police and agents of the state to seize people's property, to trespass on your property, to take your assets and not return them, and it undermines all due process of law. You don't have access to courts, and this bill allows foreign bodies to intervene in Canadian affairs under the same regulations. It's really a major step, I would say, towards depriving Canadian citizens of their constitutional rights under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And it's a really ominous threat. And so this week, Sean Buckley, representing the Alternative Health and Health Freedoms community in Canada, spoke before the Senate against Bill C-6. And Sean spoke very well, and I was able to attend his presentation, and he was well received by the senators and cordially received. And made a number of points in a legalistic way. In ways, I felt sometimes the most important things are left unsaid of the seriousness of this bill. But Sean spoke very well, and I went out and I took two other people from Ottawa, and we attended. And I was very disappointed because I thought there was to be a rally there in support of Sean, but there was nobody there other than myself and my two associates and a doctor who accompanied Sean. And anyway, while I was there, I delivered a letter which I wrote to the Senate subcommittee, and I left signed copies of this letter there. And then I'm going to read that letter. And the letter, it at the top of the letter, even on the copy I gave to the senators, it has a photograph which I went downtown Ottawa and took us. There's a big one of the Rockefeller spiders in Ottawa. Okay, these big massive spider sculptures. They're like 30 to 40 feet tall. Okay, you have one in New York City at the Rockefeller Center. You have one in the London Financial District in England. You have one at the World Court in The Hague. And the most famous Black Widow spider sculpture goes back to Nazi Germany. And they had a great big black, huge Black Widow spider and had seven little pods given off by this Black Widow spider. But anyway, so I went downtown Ottawa and I take photographs of this spider. And if I frame it right, I can get the Canadian House of Parliament behind the spider. And the spider in my photo is looming over the House of Commons of the Canadian government. And anyway,
I want
so
a copy of that one, Bill.
Yeah, that picture. That's the on the cover of this book I'm writing, which is called O Canada Lost, The Ascendancy of the New World Psychiatric Disorder. And that's my cover image. And anyway, so my letter had that picture at the top, and here's the letter. To the Honorable Members of the Senate Standing Committee for Social Affairs. Dear Senators, I write to you as a private Canadian citizen, as a PhD clinical and forensic psychologist, and as a member of the National Executive of the Canadian Action Party and Chair for Aboriginal Affairs. I write also as a father of five Canadian citizens, two of whom are in the Canadian military, and one scheduled to be deployed to the criminal war being perpetrated in Afghanistan in service of those same people who are now bringing us Bill C-6. Like a growing number of Canadians, I have woken up to the criminality of what is being done by our elected government representatives in service of the shadow government and corporate financial elite within Canada. It is now known worldwide that September 11, 2001 attacks on New York City and the Pentagon were not committed by radical Muslims and Arabs, but that instead it involves the same cabal of elitists who fashioned this new world order for us and who have managed to gain effective control of the Canadian government. Paul Hellyer, esteemed former Canadian Defense Minister and founder of the Canadian Action Party, in his book, Goodbye Canada, 2001, explained that the secretive Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberg Group all conceive of such a new world order, which Hellyer described as the New World Disorder, and which passes today under the euphemism of global governance. Global government by criminal psychopaths, international banksters, and Zionist cabals, the scum that rose to the top of the waters of life. These secret groups have acquired effective control over the Canadian government and have completely deceived the Canadian public through their use of the corporate media as a propaganda and mind control technology. The media all deserve David Rockefeller buttons for their deception of the Canadian public concerning all major national and international affairs over the past 50 years or longer. Maybe senators who support this Bill C-6 might similarly receive their David Rockefeller buttons also for helping to fashion the totalitarian state within Canada and helping with the genocidal agenda being perpetrated here as elsewhere. Perhaps senators might pose as a group for pictures to be taken under our local Black Widow spider with the Houses of Parliament behind, or would they prefer a group photo in front of the Masonic Lodge across the street? Canada is no longer a democratic country with a government representing the interests of the common citizens, and the media has played a pivotal role in deceiving the Canadian public over many decades. Canadian citizens are being sprayed coast to coast by high atmospheric chemtrails, while bioweapons and inoculation programs spread disease throughout the nations of the world. The foods are increasingly poisoned and genetically modified, as well as the land, air, and water. Canadian citizens are currently under attack through the biological terrorism that these people represent. Canadian military and police personnel, like the Canadian government, are guilty of treason and corrupted at the highest levels by these same criminal networks and make no real effort to arrest the true terrorists of modern times. I urge you as senators to not sell your souls for passage into this new world order nightmare that is being incrementally fashioned around the world and here within Canada. Bill C-6 has to be apprehended in terms of its relationship to the whole new world psychiatric disorder agenda being incrementally fashioned within this country. We need to arrest the real terrorists in our society and seize their assets under existing anti-terrorist legislation. You all know in your hearts that this Bill C-6 is based on lies, and it is a further step into the world of fascism and the suppression of human freedom and moral integrity. Say no to this bill and to the whole psychopathic agenda that is being advanced in our once great country of Canada. Yours respectfully, Christopher Holmes.
Yo, what he said.
Sorry, Dee?
I said, yo, what he said. In other words, amen, brother.
Did you feel
me that I was on that letter, Chris? And it's very inspiring, and you touched a lot of bases there. One of the main concerns that I have, and a lot of the people in my community have, once they sort of understand what that legislation is all about, is something that Sean Buckley, the constitutional lawyer that you were referring to, sort of points out quite eloquently, that Bill C-6 eliminates the rule of law. And the rule of law, according to, there's different interpretations of the rule of law, but according to Buckley, in the context of Bill C-6, what it does is it takes away the protection mechanism that the people have to protect themselves from the greatest threat that's always existed against people in any civilization, and that was their very own government in these larger sort of corporate societies that have developed since the Roman era, you know, or since Babylonian times, to even go back
further. Doug, let me jump in here. The biggest threat out of C6 is twofold. And I have been studying C6 for a very long time and looking into it for a very long time. And essentially, most of my work has been strategizing and unspinning C6 so people understand exactly how it's working and why a simple bill that is supposed to be a Hazardous Products Protection Act is actually something much more nefarious. In fact, it's multifarious in what it does. There's two aspects. One is due process of law, which you're referring to as the rule of law. Under the Book of Criminal and Civil Procedure, the rule of law, which basically provides you with the right of due process, you have the right to face your accuser, you have a right to a jury of your own peers, you have a right to of recourse through the courts, you have all these rights that have been given to us since Magna Carta. Okay, Magna Carta was signed in 1215 under duress, reconfirmed in 1217, and it has been standing as the standard of rule of law for all nations ever since. Now, interestingly enough, C6 does away with the need for due process. Most people would think on the surface that that only applies, that the scope is limited to hazardous products, but that is not the truth. The truth of the matter is that any clause of legislation which has been passed by Parliament may be moved by order in council or by a ministerial regulatory change, which basically means a couple of strokes of a pen, and it can be moved into any other legislation. So where you see Health Canada being given these absolutely extreme powers of arrest and seizure and all these different things absent the supervision of any court and subject only to the judgment of the Minister of Health, whose judgment, as we see about the flu shot, is kind of skewed, okay, that sets a precedent for any other minister who wants to move such provisions into his own department. And that means that C6, as it sits, has enough clauses in it which, with a few little machinations, can be made to turn this country into a police state. That's one
concern. Absolutely.
That's just
one. And there's a lot of other legislation that's been introduced in Parliament and has gone through the stages of the parliamentary vote and has gone to the Senate that sort of correspond with a lot of this.
Exactly. Exactly. But here's the kicker. The real kicker.
Before you go any further, what C6 does, as far as I'm concerned, is it sets a precedent for more legislation in a similar manner.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's meant to do. Now there's now there's one that I think is the biggest of the big, okay, of all these egregious clauses that have been stuck into C6. This one strikes me as the one that is most dangerous vis-a-vis the New World Order. And that is a clause in Section 2 that makes us subject to the dictates of foreign authorities. And under the definitions that are provided by the Government of Canada, that authority word can be translated into foreign governments.
That's right.
And trade is going
to
be, et
cetera. The United Nations and the Codex Alimentarius Doctrine.
Well, this is the thing. It is the door opening to Codex. It is the door opening to global government. It is the one clause which, if applied to other ministries, can literally make Canada as a nation subject entirely to a global governance. Entirely. Now it starts
off. Yeah, between
off,
that and the Copenhagen Accord.
That's what I'm referring
to. Canada as being our home, true north, strong and free, could be
yeah, and they use,
over
now,
in the very
now let
future.
Let me finish here because this is important too. The word accord, okay, does not fall under one of the vocabulary words that are used where Parliament has the right of access and debate. Okay, the word accord doesn't need to be parliamentary reviewed.
Right.
It doesn't need to be. So Harper can go and sign in Copenhagen this accord, which makes us subject to a foreign government, while C6 is being blithely passed by our senators, large numbers of whom are totally under pressure and totally being lobbied from Harper's people, not to mention Health Canada.
So in the bigger picture, what I'm trying to do is educate people about Bill C-6, like both of you have, and I know BK has spoken quite a bit about it too. And then in the bigger picture, the bigger perspective is how can we solve this problem? How can we stop this trend? The first big issue that we have to consider is we have an unelected appointed Senate. To even consider that we call ourselves a democracy since 1867 and to have our laws finalized before they go to an accountable executive, which is the Queen of England, to be finalized by an unelected Senate is preposterous. So there's a lot of reforms, I think, that
of course
need
it
to
is,
happen
but
in Canada.
But, Doug, here's the problem. Here's the problem with that, okay? Now, bear in mind, I've spent 35 years in public relations, and I can unspin propaganda better than just about anybody I know, okay? And I'm not bragging when I say that. I'm just saying that's my area of expertise. And when I look at how they have set this thing up, and when I look at how they have basically said nothing about agreements, said nothing. A good example is right here in Ontario with the harmonized sales tax. Okay, now I watched question period going on in the Ontario legislature, and for weeks the opposition parties were hammering the Liberals, just hammering them about this HST and screaming on and on and on and on about what it was going to cost the average Canadian and naming their constituents and saying, these people are in rough shape, they can't afford your HST. And every time that came up, what did McGuinty or one of his minions say? Oh, well, we're about creating 600,000 jobs in Ontario. Are you against that? Well, of course, you can imagine what framed the debate from then on. In the meantime,
no, the road to hell
has
always stayed with good intentions, is it not?
Yeah, well, this is how they play it with Delphi technique. They narrow the argument till you have to agree. And, I mean, it just gets ridiculous. But here's what McGuinty did. McGuinty signed an agreement between him and Harper to get infrastructure dollars, several billion dollars, which is supposed to be transfer money, which is supposed to be ours in any event, no strings attached. He stuck a string on it. What was the strain? The HST. Now, McGinty, under weeks and weeks of questioning from two opposition parties, did not tell anyone that he had signed away our rights to have our separate sales tax. We'd signed it away, that he did it without mandate, without discussion, without debate, without informing anybody. He went ahead and changed the rules. And then when people found out about it, what did he say? Oh, I don't know anything about that stuff. Ask Dwight Duncan, our finance minister, who basically has gone back to the rubric of and the mantra of, we're creating 600,000 jobs in Ontario, and you're not. Nanner, nanner. And that's exactly what the legislative arguments have been. Nowhere is anybody hammering the fact that the Premier lied to the province of Ontario, he lied to the Parliament of Ontario, he lied to everybody, and then blithely slid on as though that lie had never been exposed. And you know what? People just sat there and swallowed it. So if you think for a hot second, people, that they aren't using these same kind of techniques on a daily basis at all levels of government, you've got another think coming. Now, unfortunately, one of the biggest barriers we have to people learning what's really going on is one paradigm that's stuck in their heads. They can't imagine that people would be that evil. They can't imagine that their government would be that nasty against them. And what they don't realize is that our government is not our government. Yeah. Our government is taking orders from somewhere else, and they're being enforced from somewhere else. And our government, our actual government, is a whole lot smaller than the 300-odd members of Parliament who sit in Ottawa.
And even my argument is, I wholeheartedly agree with you, but my argument is, from a fundamental standpoint, our parliamentaries are not, parliamentarians are not necessarily accountable to us. Their oath of office is a swearing in to the Queen, just like our police officers, just like our military.
Okay, let me unravel another.
Which,
no, you're right.
Canada has gone to the dumps also. At least they have the fundamental structure that holds their elected officials and other officials like police and military accountable to the U.S. Constitution, which is the protection of the people. Here in Canada, police, military, only accountable to the Queen. So, in fact, what we were accusing them of treason of is not even necessarily legally treason.
Let me untie yet another knot. You've underscored a hugely important point. That's hugely important, what you just said. Okay, but let me unravel it one knot further.
Mm-hmm.
What people do not realize is that all of these legislation pieces that are being knit together right now that are legally as well as factually, okay, because we know that our government is not our government. They're not representative. They're not democratic. The party system destroyed that. But what they don't know is that the vast majority of parliamentarians are living only on talking points. They know nothing. They know nothing. They are kept deliberately in the dark. And what is happening is we're being governed by order and council. There's a small little group at all levels of government, and they are the ones making the decisions under the table and behind the scenes. They're the Wizard of Oz. That's who they are. They're the, well, sub-wizards, because we know who the real wizards are. But they're sub-wizards. They're part of that wizardry that's going on. They're men behind the curtain, and they're very small men. But,
and even our elected representatives are intimidated by these people. Our MPs know a lot more. I don't believe there's any MP who doesn't know 9/11.
Well, they sure, but they can't talk about it, Chris.
No,
if they want to stay in power, they have to shut their mouth. It's just like the medical community is not tolerating Dr. Rashid Batar after he goes and proceeds to get Desiree Jennings on the road to a complete recovery from this damage the shot did to her. You know, he's being attacked. These guys get attacked. There's multifarious ways in which these guys can be squelched. And one of the ways is by labeling them a backbencher and telling them to behave accordingly.
Did you read the letter from David Nash talking about his encounter with his MP?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
Oh, well, I don't remember all the details, but it was like the fellow hadn't been there when the vote was passed. He acknowledged what David Nash said about the bill and made comments that concerning how everybody was afraid to say anything and he didn't want to, and then he didn't want David Nash reporting his comments and so on. Like, you could just see the intimidation of our own MPs. Like, it's really quite disgraceful.
Oh, yes. I have watched newbie MPs take office with all of the idealism on the planet. There are some people, one of those people, I can't recall her name right now. I've got a brain blockage happening. But she was the first Inuit MP. Ethel Blondin, that was her name. Ethel Blondin, who then became Ethel Blondin Andrew. Okay, and I met her within a matter of a few months of her election, and I was speaking at a liberal function for Dennis Mills, and she and I shared a podium, which was very nice, and I heard her very inspired speech. She moved me almost to tears with her speech about her people and how it was so great that, someone from that neck of the woods was actually going to, someone from the Inuit community themselves was actually going to have a say in Ottawa. And she literally moved me to tears. And I went to her after the event was over, and I gave her a hug, and I said, "Don't let the bastards grind you down."
Yeah.
So where's Ethel Blondin?
Sorry.
Where is she? You see, she started, and I'm just using her as one example. She started out with all of the inspired idealism that we should be demanding every day out of our members of parliament, every day out of our council members, out of our members of provincial parliament. Every day, that's what those people should be giving us.
Yeah.
They are well paid.
And what did happen to her, Dee? Is she still in her position?
She's still around, but she's no longer, she's a backbencher, and she stayed that way. Now, I don't know how they pulled Leona Aglukkaq out of the ashes, but she's all of a sudden become a very important personage. And, of course, she's a very important parrot is what she is.
Yeah.
Because she's just parroting the lines.
My vision of Canada is a Canada where people would actually be inspired and have the time to be part of the governmentary process, The whole idea of a democracy is that the state is actually led by the people and that the government are just strictly agents of the people, if we weren't paying on average over 50% of what we make, in some cases as much as 60% of what we make to taxes, people would have the time to be part of their governmental process on all three levels of government. So my sort of perspective is, as long as we continue with the architectural, our political archetype that we have right now, I don't see any real big changes towards any improvement. People are just throwing up their arms. They haven't even got the time to address any of these things. There's people working two or three jobs in my community just to pay rent and put food on the table.
Yep.
They haven't even got time to find out what these parliamentarians and secret government cabals are up to,
And that is,
in an ideal society, people would probably be working, 10 hours a week to put the food on the table.
Yeah.
And then they could spend that 20 hours of a week making sure that their best interests are being taken care of to the best degree by their elected officials.
And this is part and parcel.
That is next to impossible or totally impossible for most people.
This is part and parcel of the propaganda and mind control that has been used through advertising, through the media, through all kinds of educational systems, through the medical community. This is what they have created deliberately.
Absolutely.
We have been disempowered financially, intellectually, educationally, medically. We have been disempowered. And what people need to realize is that getting your power back from these people is as simple as deciding to take it back. Because all we have to say is no. That's all we have to do. There is safety in numbers. We are, if they want to call us a herd, fine. Because no man on earth can stop a stampede. I have that from good authority from Roy Rogers. Okay, no man on earth stops a stampede. Only takes a good idea.
Well, the question
to start
is
one.
Educate the stampede, because a lot of a stampede is saying, well, I'm a liberal, it's the conservatives causing the problem. Or the
they can play that, Hegelian dialectic if they want.
There's a lot of understanding that there's a problem, but do people really know what the root of the problem is? And that, I believe, is the key, bringing them to the root of the cause.
I would suggest
that people know the root of the problem. Like, they don't understand what's happening.
The establishment is trying to create conflict amongst the people. We've got to drop our conflicts amongst each other and find out exactly where the problems are coming from. And it's this elite UN cabal that's tied to all these secret societies. We have to understand the significance of the Jesuit society, one of the strongest secret societies that exists, and most of the truth movement people just back right off when the Jesuits are mentioned. Pierre Elliott Trudeau was trained by the Jesuits. The Jesuits sunk the Titanic. They started the Federal Reserve. We really got to get past the disinformation.
Okay, now hold on, Doug.
And
please,
the source
hold
of the
on.
Problem.
Hold on. This is important that people realize. You know, I, as a person who has been awake for a good 10 years and more, okay, not the last three, I was one of those people who literally made an outcast of herself back in the late 90s, spotting this stuff and understanding this stuff. And I'm telling you, you know how hard it is for people to break the paradigm, to break the hamster on a wheel feeling that most of us have in our lives, in our daily lives. And get past that, break that paradigm, and actually start to think. And I'm telling you, from all my experience as a therapist and as an unspinner and as a creator of spin, the best thing you can do is follow the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what I follow in every time I speak to somebody. You've got to find a piece of common ground where they feel comfortable.
I keep things simple, but I also believe that solving these problems is going to take some pretty extreme measures, and they don't necessarily have to involve violence, because violence
is the last
resort.
I've got one simple answer.
Disobedience is something that worked very well
for
Mahatma Gandhi.
Whoa, there's one concept
based on an American concept called the Oath Keepers a little while ago. And the Oath Keepers essentially is something where we ask our police and military to not carry out any orders, if given, to impose this new world order on their very own people here in Canada. So what I'm talking about here is revolution, but a positive revolution, because we have to understand that we do need police and we do need a military to protect us, but we need them to protect our sovereignty and our interests. Not the agenda of the New World Order, elitist UN, all these characters that are trying to dismember our national identity in favor of this world government. So we can do that on all kinds of levels.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's the all kinds of levels thing that gives me a real pain in the butt. You know why? Because when you have all kinds of levels to fight, you have to split your army into all kinds of levels. And so the best strategy, if you read Art of War, the best strategy is pick your common ground strategy and put your whole army on it and knock it down. This is why we've been so effective against the H1N1 shots, to the point where the total shots given in the Toronto, Greater Toronto Area, which is over 3 million people, is only 150,000 as of yesterday.
We've done a pretty good job. I'm going to have to take control a little bit here, Dee. I'm going to need to take control because we are coming right down to the end. And sorry
can
to
I say one off, more sentence?
I'm going to give you a final sentence, Dee.
No, right now, because it ties to that. I'll give me 5 seconds. The point here that I want to make is the way that we did it was by everybody dropping their diverse concerns and coming together and hammering one issue. That's how we did it. So, yes, Doug, we've got to come together. Yes, we do. But we got to pick our battles carefully.
Absolutely, I agree with you.
Thank you very much, truthful information,
not disinformation. It's very important at this point.
Dee, thank you very much, and we're bound to have you back again. And thanks for your support. Yeah. I'll let Dee go, and I'll hold Doug on a little bit more. Doug, you still got a minute?
I'm speaking with you, Dee.
Nice to talk to you, and I hope to meet you very soon.
I think we will. We'll be talking to BK soon, and I'm sure you're associated with him closely. We'll be talking
very
again
much
soon.
So. Yes, very much
bye-bye.
So. Good to talk to both of you.
Okay, bye, Dee.
Thanks, Christopher. Bye-bye.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, Doug, it was a pleasure having you join us today and to make further connections here between us all. Could you give out the website for your Owen Sound Free Press?
Absolutely. It's www.owensoundfreepress.com. All one word. The city is Owen Sound, just the way it sounds, freepress.com.
People who've listened to my show, Doug has bravely put my letter up there, so you can read my letter up on his site.
It's great
and
now.
It's an excellent site with all
kinds. Right now, Chris, your letter's right there. And there's a lot of concern in this community about Bill C-6. A lot of people that are, advocates of natural medicine, natural foods, that type of thing. But the farmers are concerned, too. The farmers are up in arms with these NGOs and these UN sort of subculture organizations that are somehow or another step by step gaining sort of access.
Yeah. So thank Doug, Dee, and BK. And let's remember people there in the U.S. and Canada, we're all sharing this common battle, and this is a worldwide movement, and we need to work together. And I think everything said here has application in the States as elsewhere. And we got this Lord of the Rings battle, and don't be a hobbit sitting at home watching your TV. You know, wake up. We all need to make efforts. Like we in Canada, like the States, we've been very spoiled. We have had a life of privileges, and now it's time for all good men and women to stand up for your country and for your children. Because unless we deal with these problems, we're going to enter a nightmare world. And at the same time, if we could take back our countries, so many of our problems, they've all been artificially created. We could solve the problems of our nation so simply if we really had justice in this world. And we appeal to all the military and police out there. Remember your loyalty to the peoples of Canada and the States. You didn't go into the police and the army to become New World Order thugs. You didn't do that. You went into these services to serve your country and your fellow men and women. And we need people to honor your real oaths, what's in your heart. Thank you to BBS, Don and Doug and Seth all there, and Don Nikoloff. Give my love to Don. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. And remember yourself. Try to stay upright of heart. Goodbye, all.